Welcome back to the Deep Dive. Today, we are swapping the boardroom for the bunker, and we're getting right into the thick of the 2026 BMW Australian PGA Championship at Royal Queensland.
Yeah, we've gone through the round one commentary, the post-round interviews, and we're here to really break down what happened beyond just the scores.
Our mission is to understand the strategy, the heart, and, you know, the real human drama behind the numbers you see on TV.
Exactly. It's about the high-stakes moments, the resilience, and what it takes to survive a course like this on day one.
Okay, let's unpack this.
Mm-hmm.
And we have to start with the biggest moment of the day, the BMW hole-in-one hole.
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, they put a $300,000 M5 Touring right there on the line, and someone actually goes out and gets it on Thursday.
Daniel Gale. And what a shot. I mean, securing that car is a career highlight for sure, but we really need to look at how tough it was.
Right.
The commentary team, they were saying they'd be hard-pressed to find one today. And that was because the pin was tucked way over on the left.
So what does that mean exactly, a pin over on the left? Why is that so hard?
Well, for most right-handed players, it just takes away your margin for error. Your bailout area is gone. You're trying to hit a controlled fade into a tiny target and any little mistake.
It's in the bunker or it's over the green.
Exactly. So Gale's shot wasn't just, you know, a lucky bounce. It was pure precision under pressure. High risk. But this time, the ultimate reward.
And the course conditions weren't exactly helping, right?
Not at all. They had lift, clean, and place rules in effect from the start. That tells you things are wet, maybe a bit muddy, and just generally unpredictable out there.
Which makes his shot even more impressive. But this is what I find really interesting, the contrast between that instant flash of brilliance and the slow grinding comebacks we saw.
That's where you see the real mental strength of these players. You can't win the tournament on Thursday, but you can definitely lose it.
Take Adam Scott. He bogeys his first hole, the 10th, but he doesn't let it rattle him. He comes back with four birdies on his back nine, which was actually his first nine.
He showed that veteran poise, calculated aggression. But the most dramatic story for me had to be Matias Sanchez.
Oh, that scorecard was wild.
He started bogey, bogey. I mean, for a lot of players, that's it. Your day is derailed. But he just completely reset.
Five birdies in his last six holes? That's not a comeback. That's an explosion.
It is. And it makes you wonder, what is that mental switch? How do you just flip it like that? He somehow managed to completely compartmentalize those first two holes and just execute.
We also saw a different kind of fight from Marco Penge. He was dealing with a neck issue, but still managed to finish his first nine. That's just pure grit.
It really shows you the different kinds of challenges. You have the physical battle, like Penge, and then the mental ones, like Sanchez and Scott.
And speaking of scorecards, I loved that little note from the commentary about Daniel Hillier. They called his game very neat and said it had come of age.
Yeah, and they were wondering if anyone had ever shot a 59 with a double bogey. They knew of one with a bogey, but a double.
What does that even tell us about the game today?
I think it tells you everything about the modern game. It's become so explosive. Players hit it so far, they can have these incredible runs of birdies and eagles that can literally erase a catastrophic mistake.
So you can afford a disaster on one hole if you're good enough to go on a tear right after.
That's exactly. The variance is just so high now. You see it all the time on the DP World Tour.
Okay, let's shift gears from the scores and talk about some of the individual shots. The pure artistry.
Yeah, this is where you see the real technical mastery.
Neergaard Pedersen. The commentator said his ball flight was so high, he got a sore neck looking up.
And that's not just for show, right? That height is a weapon. He hit a massive drive on 10 and left himself only 130 yards in.
Why is that height so critical?
At a course like Royal Queensland, especially with the Australian heat, the greens can get firm. That high ball flight gives you a steep descent angle. It's the only way to get the ball to steam up quickly, to really control it.
So he's thinking two shots ahead. Then you have the opposite, the finesse guys, like Wayne Niemann.
A great wedge game. Approaching a par five from only 7 meters out, that's a scoring opportunity he created with precision.
And maybe the most creative shot of the day, Mark Lehman on 12. A high ride through the trees.
Just pure ingenuity. I mean, when you're in the trees, you can punch it out low, which is safe, or you can take the high-risk route over the top. He chose the high ride, and it paid off. Landed it on the green.
It's incredible. You've got power, finesse, recovery, creativity. You need the whole package.
You really do. And we even got that great little cultural moment with the Argentinian player, Gas, or Gagos.
Right. The commentator corrected the pronunciation. A double L in Argentina is usually a J sound, a little language lesson mid-broadcast.
It just highlights how global this tour really is, even when it's set in Brisbane.
So with all that action, the round gets suspended. Weather, maybe darkness. Where does that leave us on the leaderboard? Who set the pace?
Our leader is Sebastian Garcia, the 36-year-old from Madrid. He's leading by two at minus seven.
Two strokes is a nice cushion. What's his story?
He's won on the Challenge Tour before, so he knows how to close. But what's crucial is that he finished his round, he posted his number, he gets to go rest.
Well, the chasers have to wait. And there's a big pack chasing, right, at minus four.
A huge pack. You've got big names like Ryan Fox, Anthony Quayle, Tapio Pölkkinen is also in the clubhouse at four under. But then you have Muno Barbie and Pickin, who were still on the course when they blew the horn.
So talk about the psychology of that. How does that suspension affect the momentum?
Oh, it's a massive disruption for the chasers. For Garcia, he's the target now, sure, but he's done his work. For guys like Barbie and Pickin, if you're on a roll making birdies, the absolute last thing you want is a forced stop.
It just kills the rhythm.
Completely. It cools down your putter. You have to come back tomorrow morning. Maybe it's cold, and you have to find that focus all over again. The break almost always favors the leader who's already finished.
That makes a ton of sense. Okay, now let's pivot to the human side of things. We got a fantastic interview with Brian after he shot that opening 67, four under.
It was such a revealing interview. He talked about taking 2 months off. His last event was the French Open, and because of that, his expectations were, lower coming in.
And he seemed genuinely happy with the 67. He said he drove it well, hit good irons, but also admitted to some scruffy shots around the greens. I love that honesty.
But the key thing he said, for me, was the difference between playing nicely at home and playing tournament golf. That is such a profound insight for a professional.
What's the real difference there?
Well, playing at home is social golf. It's all about feel, rhythm, enjoying the shot. Tournament golf switches your brain to process an outcome. Suddenly, every shot has a consequence. There's pressure from the field, the environment. It's a huge mental shift.
And to do that successfully after 2 months off is impressive.
Very. And he also talked about his pairing. He was comfortable. He called Adam Scott a legend, Elvis Smiley a good kid. That comfort level is a massive performance enhancer.
It lowers the stress.
Exactly. You can just focus on your game. And then he brought up the whole local connection, being back on the Australasia tour, being around the other Kiwis and Aussies.
Yeah, he said he spent more time talking than practicing. Had dinner with like 13 other Kiwis.
And that's a psychological anchor. He said Kiwis and Aussies congregate together when they're overseas. So being back here, even with the mid-30s heat and humidity, it feels like home. It's a comfort zone.
So that familiar environment, that camaraderie, it's almost like a shield against the pressure of a big DP World Tour event.
Precisely. It's a sanctuary. He got to feel relaxed and competitive at the same time, which is just the perfect recipe for a great opening round after a long break.
A really powerful point. So we've seen the spectacle of the M5 hole-in-one, the grit of comebacks from Sanchez and Scott, and now this insight into how comfort and a sense of home can shape performance.
It just proves that golf is a game played on grass, but it's one between the ears. It all comes down to mental and emotional management.
Absolutely. So we'll leave you with a final thought to chew on. If a player like Brian finds such a clear advantage in that feeling of home, how much does the absence of that cultural connection affect international players?
Right. The players who are thousands of miles from their support system, does that cultural familiarity, that comfort, secretly count for more strokes than any swing change a player could ever make? Something to think about as the week goes on.